sports. Sports, sports. Sports news. Sports stories. And if there's time, even sports opinions. It's the Sports Dump with Joe Canale.
Yes, it is the Sports Dump. I am Joe Canale, and we are going to replace that intro as soon as I possibly can. I am here, of course, with Ephraim Salaam, co-host of the Sports Dump podcast. Great to have you here, Ephraim. I'm going to put some applause in here for later on, too, when I introduce you.
I would like that.
I could do that. I do that for the Sports Widow podcast that we occasionally do my wife and I.
And you put the applause
I put applause
for
in for her. Okay. I also put it there because it helps me. It's a different intro and everything. Whatever. That's more information than anyone needed, really. But we'll be putting that in the future, too, as production levels go up. I don't know if you can hear us better than usual, but we have some new equipment. Hope it sounds better. It certainly looks better.
It does.
The other thing was pretty ratty.
Yeah, it was kind of like the first board that they decided they were going to make when they weren't quite sure.
It's like a homemade kit or something. Yeah. It's got like wires sticking out of
it.
It
was the idea. The man who invented this, that was the one
the
that
prototype.
He did in his garage.
Yeah, it's probably worth a lot more. I threw it out. Darn. Oh, well. But now this actually looks like some electronic equipment, so we're doing well with that, and I hope you can hear us. Now, we got some stuff to talk about, as always. First of all, how's your movie doing?
Movie's doing good.
Yeah?
Yeah, good. Movie's doing good, opened up well. What people don't realize is when you do an independent film,
yeah.
Even
and
the
just
Lions,
for a second, if I could stop you, the movie is
Traffic
starring Omar Epps.
Omar Epps, Paula Patton, Rosalind Sanchez, Luke Goss, Laz Alonso. It's a tough subject. It's about sex trafficking, but it's entertaining. It's informative,
and it's kind of a tense thriller.
It's a thriller.
Yeah,
it's definitely a edge of your seat thriller.
And that helps. You know, you're right. It's a tough subject, but you know, you've got the action element to it. I'm sure. And Lionsgate, you said, is involved. But I just want everyone to know what the movie was.
Lionsgate. We partnered with them, so it was a completely independent film,
right.
And we just did a distribution deal with Lionsgate to put it out.
Right.
So most people think, oh, it's a studio movie. Or no, we did it completely ourselves.
Right.
And it's performing well.
Good.
Performing well for us, so that's exciting.
That's nice. It's nice when you produce something and it does well.
Yes, that is correct. Like because this podcast.
Right. This is doing well in that we're just doing it.
Yes.
To that degree, I think we're succeeding. And we'll talk later, but I was talking to some people who've done much better at podcasts recently, doing some research. And really, they said basically doing the podcast is the only important thing, the consistency of doing it. Like, you know, obviously you want something interesting and everything, but if you stop doing it for a while, people just... you lose all your listeners. So
right.
If as long as you do it each week, they at least are like, oh, at least they're doing something.
Yeah.
We're not even expecting people to listen this far in. As long as they just download it and, you know, start it, I think that's all.
You don't even have to listen to it.
No, you don't.
But you should.
Exactly. I may get distracted from time to time. I'm a big fan of birds. And right outside our windows here, our studio windows, there's a lot of mourning doves building nests lately. So I'm very intrigued by that.
All right.
Just so you know.
Thank you.
But this is our post-draft episode. And now one thing I'm going to do in the future, just so you know, Ephraim, so that when it happens, and we're going to get you headphones at some point,
too,
because now I have an extra headphone thing. So you'll be able to go deaf just like me when I play the intro. And last week there was one point where we did like 2 or 3 minutes of just the hardest core sports talk that you can have. It was so in depth. There's going to be an alarm in the future when we get that deep into sports.
I like it.
I don't know if that means we should do more or stop, but I was listening back and I was like, oh my God, if someone. You got to be a pretty deep sports fan to follow along with this. So which was good for me, sports nerd, and you, athlete, sports, you know, media personality. But to some of the listeners there, we may have to, like, give them smaller doses of the in-depth sports. I was loving it. But listeners, if we ever get any feedback, can you sustain 5 to 7 minutes of straight hard sports talk from this podcast? I don't know. Because we were talking about some other stuff, like... Weed lips?
Yeah, weed lips.
I get nervous saying stuff like that because I'm like, I've never heard it before.
You're not quite sure if you can get away with it.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm here with you.
I was going to describe my old board as janky.
Mm-hmm.
And like so many things, I don't know if janky has some kind of...
This is the white man's plight in
today's
racial world.
Well, some
don't
white
know?
Man's plight.
Yeah.
Some just don't think about it.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm going overboard with, you know, the white liberal guilt kind of thing of like, can I say janky? But there's Janky's Cafe up there, so I guess if it's...
That's Jinkies.
Jinkies. Oh, damn it. Janky's totally different. Ephraim is leaving. He's, oh my God,
I
he's
can't
picking
believe
up the
this.
Table. You said janky!
I bet you stay away from the word ghetto, don't you?
Well... Now, ghetto actually has connotations even prior to the Elvis Presley song, which is a lot of white people's introduction in the ghetto and the do-no-no. I like that song, actually. But no, I don't mind. I use the word ghetto, but the ghetto also has World War II Polish, what do you call it, Holocaust implications, too. Mm-hmm. Ghetto's never been a good place.
That is correct. It is not.
There is a word... somebody used a word a long time ago. I was working in a show, and something rig started out with the N-word rig.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it's changed to that's a common finch right out there.
Oh,
just so you know,
hello, beautiful bird,
nice yellow bird, right? Yeah. This woman used the original term, which
mm-hmm.
was N-word rig.
Mm-hmm.
Much. To the surprise of everyone in the room.
Was she black?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That's exactly it. That's why it was especially surprising.
Were you guys on air or
no,
you guys were just
rehearsal.
Having a conversation?
It was a rehearsal.
Oh.
And actually, Molly was in the rehearsal. This is a story that came down to me. And there was a African-American guy in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Argument ensued, not
yes.
surprisingly. That word was never used again. But
she thought it was okay to do that.
Yeah, I don't think she even thought of it. I really don't think, and honestly, this you know, she had worked at this place for 30 years, mm-hmm. and...
Most racists don't even know they're racist. Do you know that? What are you talking?
My grandmother, for
Everybody
years,
uses that term. It's like,
And it comes, you know, as they get older, and, you know, it doesn't... I understand, you know, racism comes from ignorance and fear.
Yes.
You know, and you know, generational stuff. My grandmother was certainly racist. I remember she used to say that Bill Cosby, now, we know now.
Yes.
But there was none of this. She said he was a communist for years. And I don't know, but like, I don't know where it came from. I don't know what that meant.
I think I know where that came from.
What is the...
So back in those days,
yeah.
The worst thing you could be is a communist.
Yeah, sure.
Right? So do you have this successful African-American man who has blurred the color line,
yes.
and is
and
beloved
yes.
by America.
Yeah, and this is probably even before Cosby's show. He had been a star for years,
for
Fat
years.
Albert, and he was in a detective show, too. I forget what it was.
Uptown Saturday Night.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of stuff. So for her, the worst thing in the world that you can be is a communist.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just the N-word
right.
anymore because he had surpassed that actual status.
Uh-huh.
Because
right,
now
right.
he was beloved.
Like
he was,
OJ
he
before.
Was, exactly.
Everything.
So the next thing he could be to make her feel better
yeah.
about not liking him was a communist.
Yeah.
So whether it had no bearing on anything political,
yep.
for her, he's a communist.
Yeah. And she, to be fair, I don't know that she, God, I hope. Actually, I had another revelation because I remember a letter my mom wrote to my grandmother.
The word
Negro was in the letter.
I just want you to know that right now, Joe is going through a retrospective.
I'm going through an awakening.
He's getting woke right now. He is realizing that he has grown up in a racial household.
It's weird though, because it was a liberal household, and my parents both kind of that generation, but the generation before certainly
mm-hmm.
was not. And I do agree with you, and I think like communist almost was a safer way to make him evil.
Yeah.
As opposed to the tip.
Can't,
he's not
can't
evil
say the
N word. Right.
But I'm gonna call you a communist.
He's evil anyway.
Tell us about the Negro letter.
It was a. We moved to Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
and I remember looking at these letters, and it may have been from my mom, my grandmother to my mom, but the word Negro was in it. I think it was from my mom to my grandmother. It's like 1973 or whatever in Tennessee, but I remember. Like, she showed me the letter. I was like, do you see this? She's like, yeah. I mean, she didn't even know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure she probably didn't realize she had written that 30 years later. But yep. then going back and looking at it, she was like, oh, my God, I did.
Yeah,
but
that
TV,
was
that was the word.
That was the term for African-Americans at the time. It had transformed from the original N-word
yep.
to Negro.
Yep.
And then it went from Negro to Black,
yep.
and then from Black to African-American.
Right. Now, is Black passé?
I have a question. I always wanted to talk to somebody about this. So why is it that in the entire world, the only two races that are named or called or identified with by a color
mm-hmm.
are Caucasians and African Americans? Like
right.
No.
Otherwise, you're just you're French, you're
Polish, you're
yeah, right.
English,
right? Yeah.
You're
and you see what, this and
no one is yellow.
No, and right.
No one is orange,
and
no
it's
one
not,
is beige.
And it's not that in other countries. Like
it's not.
And the funny thing is, you can relate this to sports, at least in my mind, because I watch a lot of soccer, international soccer. And so the World Cup is coming up. You know, France, the French national team.
They're black. They're
I
all.
Mean,
they're all.
There's
they're
a couple,
all.
There's a couple, but real ugly looking white dudes, too. Oh, my God. Ribéry on the French team looks like every caricature of a French scumbag you've ever seen. He's got scars on his face. He looks like he smokes 100 cigarettes a day. But yeah, the black men are
we're
actually
the only,
beautiful on the French.
We're
team.
The only country.
Pogba.
Like when you're watching the Olympics, you watch the Olympics, and every other country identifies their athletes as French,
yeah.
Italian, right? We're the only country that would classify our athletes or is it white athlete or black athlete.
Right, right.
Why is that?
Because segregation is such a part of our country. And even in our sports, it's demarcated according to racial lines in many ways.
But why the color?
Why the color?
Why the color?
Because this country is built on racism.
So why white and black, though?
Because
no one's actually black.
Right.
Right? No one's actually black.
Yeah.
And no one's actually white.
Right.
You're
well,
more of a beige-ish, and I'm more of a caramel type.
Right.
So why isn't it those caramels?
Because it's because they would rather. Well, you go ahead with your.
Because what was seen, and this is through the different the definition in Webster.
Yeah.
White is clarity, pure.
What it's always been associated
unblemished
with.
Unblemished or untouched by
yeah.
color.
Right.
Black is dark.
Right.
Opaque, evil.
Angels wear white, death wears black.
Right. So to equate in this country, to put you, and make it easy, make it quick, to put you on the right side or the dark side.
Oh, yeah.
The color was the easiest thing. Oh, we're white. This
right.
is the white man's world. Oh, they're black.
Right.
They're dirty. Oh, that's the ghetto.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has extended kind of now as the country has become more Hispanic.
Yes.
The brown is now included.
Yeah, brown and black is the same color.
Right, right. It's the darker shade.
Yes.
I think that's, I mean, to me, that's always been a pretty obvious reason why they would do that.
But the funny thing is, if you stay with those same color lines and rules, what is the most dominant color on the spectrum?
Are you saying, like, in terms of, like...
Of anything. The most dominant color. If you took a bunch of crayons...
Oh, the black crayon will... yeah.
Without a doubt.
No.
Which is the easiest to dilute?
Well, the white is... Yeah.
And there you have it.
The purity is, yeah. It only takes a drop to destroy.
Guess
the
who's going to be the minority in the near future?
Oh, no doubt. And that's what, I mean, I know that this is, if we've gone on like a great tangent, that's what the whole fear comes about.
Yep.
Everyone realizes that.
Petrified.
Most of the people who are afraid of immigrants see fewer immigrants than anyone else. Unless you're on a in a farming area, perhaps, and you see them. But even in those areas, like, when farmers depend on migrant workers, mm-hmm. they get along with migrant workers because they need them. Hopefully, there's, you know, there's a good relationship there, although that is probably the next level of indentured servitude that we have in this country.
Right.
Migrant workers.
Absolutely.
And the way Trump was talking the other day, God, we'll get away from this in just a second, but how he was like, you know, they'll come in, they'll work, and then we'll get them out. Like, it's just such an awful way to look at it.
I don't even recognize any statements from your president.
Yeah. My president.
Sorry, we didn't mean to get political on you
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, and we, you know, we no one listening to this.
Two,
maybe. Who
two
knows?
Two guys talking.
Just two guys. Right. And look, this is good. I think when you're right, like, did I tell you the story about what my daughter said when she met my friend Claudia, who had my older daughter? We did do mm-hmm. that story. My younger daughter, and we did talk about it. Her daycare is fairly diverse, certainly compared to my older daughters. But she still uses, because there's a couple Avas, so one Ava has a darker shade of skin.
Yeah.
So that still is like a demarcating thing. She doesn't do the she's very specific with the shades.
Yes.
Like, there's a light, but she doesn't do the black and white.
Almond Ava. It's Almond Ava.
It's there's Ava who's darker, and then there's Ava who's lighter. Mm-hmm. There's shades and stuff.
Cherry blossom
anyway,
Ava.
Yeah. Hopefully she will not ever have any of the interactions that I had to explain.
Just keep her away from your mom and those letters.
Yeah. My mom is better now, but jeez. Oh, jeez. So the draft, this is post-draft, and I had a couple questions I wanted to ask you. We'll talk about that big rugby guy, which will be fun in a second. But so this is the week after the draft. You were drafted. Describe what happens now. You're a college grad, or you were sitting at home. You found out you got drafted, and now what is the process?
That weekend, I got drafted. It was on the draft used to be on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep.
First round. First through third round was
on
Saturday,
and then the rest on
and
Sunday.
Four through seven was on Sunday.
Yep.
So what would happen is a couple days after that, they would get you on the plane. I flew coach.
Of course.
Seventh round draft picks, fly coach. First round draft picks, they send the plane to get you.
Oh, the owner's plane. Oh, jeez.
I sat in the middle row in the back of the plane.
So Chester Pitts got the plane.
Chester may have gotten the plane. Chester was a second round pick, first pick in the second round. So he may have gotten the plane.
All right.
Definitely got business or first class.
Okay.
Me, on the other hand, I got a. I had to buy a pillow if I wanted to lay my head down. And that trip.
You didn't
from
have a middle seat, did you?
That trip from San Diego to Atlanta. I did have a middle seat.
Oh.
That trip from San Diego to Atlanta is not.
You in
short.
A middle seat. Means everyone in that row has a middle seat, essentially.
Yes.
In terms of
we're all in a middle seat. And I just kept remembering sitting back there that it didn't matter because I was on the way to an NFL
it's
team.
Last coach flight I'm on, baby.
That's it. You know what I mean? And so you get on the plane and you fly out and you get in late. So that night I stayed at maybe the Best Western or something like that.
Not the Peachtree Omni?
No, I'm pretty sure Keith Brooking, who was our first pick in the first round, stayed at the Ritz-Carlton
right,
or something
okay,
like that.
Yeah.
The Omni or any,
so
something.
Even, so they even...
I was definitely in the Best... Or the La Quinta or something.
That's hilarious that even at that point, like...
Yeah, because there's no value in me yet.
Right, yeah.
Right?
So
they didn't know that I would end up starting and being the starting right
now,
type.
Now you're just worth... A $200 a night.
I'm camp fodder.
Yeah.
Right? I'm camp fodder. I'm a camp body. They go to camp with 90 guys.
Yeah.
I have to cut it down to 53
yep.
before the season starts. So I'm a guy, I'm a number there to help their potential or projected starters
yeah.
get ready to go.
They valued you just a little more than the undrafted free agents who they bring in afterwards.
That is correct.
Right.
Like I may have had a one, like I may have had my own room
yeah.
at the La Quinta.
They might
they had to share.
Room. Okay, there we go. All
right. Right? So I,
still a, you got a little
it's
bit.
It's a pecking order
yeah,
here.
There we go. You're not
and
on the bottom.
I remember that night, even though I didn't rest on the plane because I couldn't, I didn't have any leg room
right.
or
yeah.
any arm room. This was before iPhones or anything like
yeah.
that. So I'm just literally staring at the back of a seat.
For 4 hours.
With a Walkman on. Right. There were no
a Walkman is an iPod from the past.
With a tape in it, yeah. yes. A Walkman is something that we used, a portable listening yeah. device. It
with,
was
no,
a,
with no choice.
It was a Discman, actually.
Right.
I had to,
all right, okay.
I had my CD
there you go.
Booklet
all
that I had
right.
with me.
That'll last you a flight. I had my CD booklets, too.
And so I remember that night just landing in my full-size bed, I think it was.
Okay.
Yep. Thinking, man.
Equate that to a child-sized bed for
it's
anyone listening.
It's a tiny bed.
Yeah.
For I was about 290 at the time.
What do you got, a California King at home now?
Yes.
Yeah.
The extended version.
There we go.
And I remember just thinking, like, what is going to happen tomorrow? Like, I'm going to go. It's a team meeting. I'm going to sign my contract in the morning.
Wow.
And then I'm going to be sitting in a room with all of these people. Am I going to make it, and am I going to fit in? As a seventh-round draft pick, although I had confidence in myself,
yeah.
I knew no one else would have confidence in me.
Right.
So that's a tough room to be in, right? When guys are looking at everything is a status,
yeah.
right? So if you're a veteran, if you're a veteran on the team, then the status.
Yeah.
If you're a veteran who's been to a Pro Bowl, there's more status. If you're a starter, everything is ranked. Everything is status.
Yeah. And you're just above the free agents, basically.
I'm just above.
Right.
Like, literally just above.
Yeah.
And so you get into this environment, and it's like, is anyone going to talk to me? Do they care? So next morning I wake up, I get dressed, I go, they take me to the offices, I sign my contract, they give me my signing bonus.
Right there.
Right there. I have a check.
Now, do you have an agent?
Yes, I have an agent. I had
an
agent.
At the time you did?
Yes, I did. Okay. Terrible agent, but nonetheless, I had an agent.
Did he negotiate anything, or was it pretty standard?
It's no negotiation. Seventh-round draft pick is no negotiation.
So what do you have the agent for at that point?
Well, I didn't know I was going to get drafted in the seventh round.
Boom.
Right? So you have an agent right. prior. I mean, I literally could have done my own deal.
I'm going to ask, finish what you're talking about the experience, because that makes me want to ask about Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
Because his mom was his agent.
Right.
And where you get drafted, it's slotted now.
Now it's slotted. It's not a lot of heavy lifting. The second contract is
right.
where you'll be able to make – and maybe some wiggle room with incentives.
Yeah.
But
back to you getting your – well, I got the note down for that, so we'll
okay.
get back to it.
So
– how much was your bonus?
$19,000. It's not bad.
That's the difference between you and the free agents, yes?
Yes.
Right.
I think theirs was about $6,000-$7,000.
So they even get a little
get
bonus.
A little bonus.
To, oh, that's
bonus.
Good.
So I had a $19,000 check. I was like, wow, this is crazy. You know, I'm excited. Keith Brooking had maybe $2 million or something.
Oh,
like
wow,
that.
Yeah.
That's a yeah. little different. But anyway, so I...
Especially then, the first round picks got a ton. Like, Nkamadon Sue, he got like, and he was a number two pick.
Well,
he got like $40
million. The last person to break the bank and... as a first-round draft pick, was Sam Bradford.
That was the last, okay.
$50 million guaranteed.
That'll make you change the
well,
whole
that,
system.
Well, that changed the system. It was like, we can't do this
because he
anymore.
Was making more than, like, Peyton Manning at the time.
Yeah, we can't do it anymore. Yeah. We can't do it. Matthew Stafford was one of the guys who got
also,
that
yeah,
last
got a big one. Yeah.
That last big one. So now you have to earn it because you had guys who've been playing for 3-4 years who have been to Pro Bowls. They weren't making nearly that.
Yeah.
And guys are like, okay, wait, timeout.
Okay. And the rookies are always going to be the ones who get screwed in a collective bargaining because none of them are bargaining.
Right. So just
which
just
makes
think,
sense.
Just think about DeMarcus Russell with the Raiders. They have $40 million. He played 7 games, if that.
So I think he was in more than seven games, but I don't know that he played seven games.
It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Seven was just,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. He played 13 games with seven games worth of effort.
Right. There you go. So, you know, you go in and it's the head coach and the GM,
yep,
having this meeting, and they're saying, hey, you know, welcome, guys. You know, for the young guys, you know, this is the beginning of your journey. And, you know, if you can make it in this league, it starts today,
yeah,
and so on and so forth. Now that the contracts and paperwork or all of that's out of the way, it's time to get down to business. Rookies and first-year players go get changed. We're going out to practice. So we had like a little rookie mini camp.
Right. Right there. Day you get into Atlanta and everybody's doing
it. It's time to go to work.
Just this 3 days after the draft.
Yeah. It's time to go to work. We're going to see what you got. Go out there, do some drills, so on and so forth. That next weekend, we had a full mini camp where everybody, mandatory mini camp where everybody had come in, because guys had already been working out in OTAs, off-season workout,
sure,
all the veteran guys. So they were already in
all
town.
All the volunteer workouts.
Right, volunteer.
Quote, unquote.
And so, you know, the first couple of days were good because all rookies. So, yeah, you're out there. You're doing your thing.
Right, right.
But then when the real talent comes in, you're like, oh. So that's what an all-pro.
That's why we got a few days.
That's what an all-pro defensive end looks like.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And Chuck Smith was our all-pro defensive end. And when I tell you, he gave me the business.
Yeah.
We had no pads on, nothing. We just had helmets. And it was, when I say full speed.
Yeah.
Which was, come to think of it, it wasn't even full speed for them.
Yeah.
Just us.
Right. Because he knew he didn't have to go full speed yet.
I don't want to say I was in over my head.
Yeah.
But I had to really focus.
Sure.
I had to concentrate. I had to focus. And
I mean, that's a huge jump up.
Oh,
huge. For anybody, but and not to say San Diego State again.
You say about the Aztecs.
Well, what I'm saying, though, is like the difference between Alabama and San Diego State in terms of preparation for the pros is probably pretty big.
No.
You think so that program is on?
Well, my offensive line coach played 17 years in the NFL.
Okay, so even at that, even I guess D1, there's only 100 D1
our head
schools.
Coach had come from the NFL.
Who's your head coach?
Ted Tolner at the time.
Oh, okay.
So everything we did in training
was to do that.
Was straight from NFL guys.
Okay.
So all the technique we learned, that's why myself and Kyle Turley, who was the right tackle in San Diego State, I was the left tackle. We both were drafted in the same draft. He was the first tackle taken. I was the last tackle taken.
You were in the same draft as him.
Yeah, he got drafted number 7 pick overall.
That's
I got
a
drafted.
Good line. So was Pitts on that line too?
No, he was younger than us.
He was younger, so
yeah.
You found him.
Our senior year, we had the number 5 offensive line in the nation behind. Nebraska was 4.
Ah.
So it was Michigan, Notre Dame. Michigan, Notre Dame, USC, Nebraska, and then us.
What year is this you came
this
in?
This was 98.
90, oh.
So it would have been the 97.
So Nebraska was still good then.
Yeah, yeah.
They were
but
great
I
then.
Say I say that to say that the coaching that those guys were getting, we were getting.
Yeah.
That's why we were so good, and that's why we were ready to go. And subsequently enough, Kyle and myself, out of all those tackles drafted and all those offensive linemen drafted, we both made that rookie team after our first year in the NFL because we were that prepared to play.
Yeah, okay. Well, in that case, you did get the training. I did not mean to disparage San Diego State.
Well, you stepped in something that you couldn't get off your shoe.
That's all right. You think that's the first time that's happened to me? I do that all the time. That's basically why I became an improviser, to get myself out of wiping shit off my shoe. So you were talking about full speed, and that reminds me of, I saw some of these highlights, and the Nebraska, I'm a Nebraska fan, you talk about the offensive line. So one thing that was going on the boards after the draft, there's a guy from Nebraska who went pro as a junior, Nick Gates. Went to Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas, big-time high school, big-time recruit, but wasn't dominant. Mm-hmm. You might know his name, but most people don't. Anyway, he did not get drafted, and a lot of Nebraska fans are like, some freaking rugby guy from Australia gets drafted before our tackle. Now, you look at this Australian rugby guy drafted by the Eagles, I think, in the seventh round. And they show highlights of him tearing up. Like, to call what he's giving a stiff arm is an insult to what he's doing. Because he's burying dudes.
Yeah, and the difference is he's a offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Who's been carrying the ball.
Yes.
Right? So his agility, his footwork, his hands are vastly superior
right.
To a guy who had just been an offensive yeah. lineman.
Right.
I understand because I wasn't always an offensive lineman. When I went to college, I was a linebacker and a defensive end.
Yeah.
They moved me to offensive line.
And you had played basketball.
I had played basketball. I had played a skill position earlier on in high school. So when you have that type of skill, that type of hand-eye coordination, that type of foot speed and hand speed, it only enhances your ability. Now you have to be able to stay in front of someone. Yeah. You have to be able to be physical with
right.
someone. So those
– you have to be able to move backwards now.
You
got to
be able to move backwards. And the lateral movement.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all about – so when I watch his highlights and watch him playing rugby and him dragging people for yards.
Yeah.
And him just throwing –
4, 5, 6 people.
It's just – just so if you put him in a situation where he's pulling around and he has to get a linebacker or a DB, he has the ability and the foot speed and the agility and the quickness to adjust on the run.
Right.
So it's basically a running back following a
yes,
running back.
Right. Because usually with a lineman, you just see the guy kind of plow, and then once he gets some speed going, he just goes.
One direction. Like yes. if you make a cut as a DB or a linebacker, yeah. we're probably going to miss you.
Right. Now, did you see – so you see this, mm-hmm. did it make you kind of wish that you had been a rugby player for a while?
Well, funny thing is I just went down and told you about that first night I got to Atlanta, stayed yes. at the Easy Eight or the La Quinta or whatever it was.
Right.
So as I was checking in, they were getting my room together, and it was just these loud group of guys with this I think it was New Zealand accent, and they
okay.
were just pounding beers at the bar
right.
and one of the guys came home and was like, "Oh, you're a biggin." And I was like, "Excuse me?" He was like, "Look at," he was grabbing me, like he was
yeah.
like all touching my yeah. arms and my legs, and I'm like, "Yo, not really the custom here
yeah.
in America."
It was clear he was foreign at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh," and he would call over to his friends, "Hey, Gus, Gil, whatever
yeah,
they were.
Yeah, yeah. Probably
and
Gus
so,
and
like,
Gil.
4 or 5 guys come over. They were like, "Oh." And they were like, "Oh, what are you here for?" And I was like, "I just got drafted by the Atlanta Falcons." "The Falcons?" I said, "Yeah, it's American football." Rugby, man sport.
Right, right.
We play a rugby. We just won a rugby championship, whatever rugby championship or something like that. And they were like, "Oh." And then they called the owner of the team over. And he comes over and said, "Oh, I bet you're fast." I was like, "Yeah, I ran a 4.8. And he was just like, "Oh, you ever play rugby, a real man sport? We don't wear the helmet and all of that." And I was like, "No, we don't really have rugby
yeah.
here like that in the States." And he offered me a contract to come play on their team in the La Quinta.
Wow. Not as good as your NFL contract.
Well, yes, this one was.
It was?
He said, "We'll give you $500,000.
Wow.
I said, "You've never even seen me play rugby."
Wow.
"We can teach you to play rugby. We can't teach the size and your speed."
How is that not happening more often?
Because there's no outlet. Where are you going to play rugby at here?
Yeah.
Where are you going to play rugby?
But
and,
why doesn't
and when you do go play rugby, who's going to be able to watch you?
Yeah.
You got to remember, in American sports, kids want to play sports because they want to be seen.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
That's why nobody plays baseball. Nobody plays soccer. Where are you going to watch? It's a baseball game on right now.
Yeah.
It is 10:43 Pacific Standard Time on a Wednesday. They're playing a baseball game somewhere right now.
Probably.
Who's watching that game?
Well, I'm going to watch a soccer game in about an hour.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
That's
you,
me,
a
though.
Grown man, right? Not a hot chick. Right, not a
no, no
not
no
a not
chick.
A young 20-something-year-old.
Although, if I was a hot chick, I'd watch even more soccer than I
yeah,
do, probably.
That's the pipeline.
It is. Soccer is a very attractive sport on both sides.
A lot of manicured eyebrows.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
But I say that to say they offered me $500,000 for 1 year. My NFL contract was $165,000.
Sure, holy shit. But again, you did make a lot going to the Super Bowl.
But it just, if I would have gone and said, you know what, forget the NFL, I'm going to go play rugby for a year for $500,000, what comes next?
Yeah. And what if you take your knee out there doing that?
Oh, I definitely would have. Right. I mean, I'm 6'8".
That's
so
the fear with that guy.
I'm like, I'm not going to.
It's kind of like, he's like, that dude is like a, go ahead.
None of them had front teeth.
Yeah.
And I said, that is what I'm not going to do. Walk around the planet with false teeth in my mouth.
You lose any teeth in your?
No.
Nice. Not basketball either.
Look at these things, huh? Look at those.
They look pretty good, but those could be fakes. They're good with fakes now.
No. So that was that's my rugby story, and that's how dominant size and speed is across the board in sports in general.
Yeah. Well, and it's rare.
Oh yeah.
Now, do you think that guy would be, are they wasting him at tackle, or do you make him a tight end sometimes?
No, because the different complexities from being that size, it was like 340-something, right? As a tight end, although you may have great hands, it's the precision route running.
Yeah, and he can't do it that big.
So at that big, it's you got to be able to squeeze. So when you come off that line, you take that step and you're running a drag route, which means crossing to the opposite side of the field.
Yeah.
There's a lot of traffic in there.
Yeah.
Right? What you can't do as an offensive player is mowing.
That's
just start
all he would do would be picks all along.
Before you have the ball, just mowing down defenders.
Be
a lot right?
more scoring that way.
So you got to be a little bit more agile than just having the ball in your hand and
Gronk
just stampeding
might be
people.
Kind of the maximum size for a
and even he
point.
Tends to just
and he gets a lot of injuries.
He does,
and those
that's a big surface to hit.
And he's had two or three injuries the same way where he's coming across somebody goes for his legs because he's so big.
Yeah,
then the knee comes out.
Who's gonna tackle him up top?
Yeah,
right. So putting
so they
him,
have to go after the
putting
knees.
Him at tight end. That now goal line tight end.
Yeah,
that's,
right.
That's a different situation
or a fullback or something.
That's different.
Yeah,
you know. But as in the middle of the field, he's just too big. Put him out on at left tackle. And let him be an athlete. Let him be use that size and that quickness.
This is a talk for another day, but Philly is scary. I mean, NFL teams don't stay good for that long.
No, but they knew the fact that they don't have that money tied up into the quarterback allows them to be able to jump on an opportunity. Like most teams who win the Super Bowl, other than the Patriots, they get poached.
Yep.
Right? So they had a lot of people coming in and take Philly – at the quarterback position as paying a price that they can afford the luxury of other talent.
They can pay the other guys. And then they have Foles, which might they may be able to turn into a draft pick or something too.
Right.
Interesting. Well, that's again, a talk for another day. That rugby talk was good. I will finish up on this just because I know we started off with some heavy, but I just want to say, like, Eric Reed filed a suit today.
Yes.
So Kaepernick is one. That's one point. You can maybe even say that's an exception. But when you have two examples, now we're starting a pattern. And that's, I think, where he has a good court case.
He does. My only question is, would he have wanted to play in the NFL again? Because
you think it's over?
Yeah. There's very few people who can sue the league and still play in it.
Mm.
Al
Davis did it.
That doesn't
he was
typically.
An owner,
he was an owner.
Yeah.
That doesn't typically. And a lot of the owners.
Oh, they hated him.
But secretly, they loved him because they kept the NFL above board. It kept people, right?
Like, but is there any owners now who
Jerry
have
Jones
that?
Is the only other guy who does that. Remember, he had a lawsuit against
us,
which he had to rescind and pay a fine.
Yeah, he paid $2 million. He paid all the lawyer fees. Yeah.
Because of conduct detrimental. So if they would do that to an owner
right.
who's suing the league,
sure.
what would they do to a player?
Well, and I don't even know that there are any owners who openly or secretly have sympathy for Reed. You know
right.
what I mean? I don't know if the like, there are certainly people in the world who do. There are
yeah,
certainly
but look
rich
at the
people
owners.
In the world, but the owners don't seem like the types. But it's also such an obvious.
Well.
It's so obvious. I didn't
it's
mean
a lot
for
of,
my voice to get so cracky and whiny.
It's
there,
a lot of obvious injustice going on.
Yeah, I suppose you
right.
You would
know. So when you look at the context of the NFL and in most people's eyes, it's a game, it's entertainment, it's television.
Yeah.
Here's a guy whining about not being paid millions of dollars to play a game.
Yep.
There are real world issues going on. It falls into that category. No matter how wrong it is, and I think it is collusion for this young man not to have. He's a tremendous young talent.
He's made an all-pro team.
Yes.
He said he won't kneel anymore.
It doesn't
There's
matter.
There's no reason that you can point to other than that.
And I don't know if he'd win his case because the NFL can make it go forever.
Right. And the problem is with no guaranteed contracts and shit. Right. They have years.
They can
he
make
has
it go
four
forever.
Years left in his prime. Two, three maybe.
So he may not. The fact that he filed this lawsuit pretty much determined whether he was ever going to play again.
Well, he must have felt desperate. He must have felt like it's a last, you know, a last chance thing.
I would have waited.
Yeah.
I would have waited till training camp.
Right, when someone
something is going to happen. We know that.
God, there's.
But you take yourself off a short list.
But geez,
when
if I'm an owner. Don't these guys want to win so
no,
bad?
No. No, they don't.
Because you can get these two guys right now.
It doesn't matter.
Pennies on the dollar.
It doesn't matter. Guess what? You know why? Because they still make money.
Yeah.
When you're in a business that's not predicated on your wealth predicated on if you win or lose.
But it's funny when they do nickel and dime.
Yeah. Guess what? The Cleveland Browns owner is still profitable.
Yeah.
They're the worst team in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
The Detroit Lions owner is still profitable.
That's what's happening in Miami, and this is the shitty part of it, that they still make money no matter what, and we none of it changes.
So it doesn't matter. It's not like, oh, we need to win. You don't need to win.
Right.
You can want to win, but you don't need to win. Yeah. Look, Dallas is the most expensive franchise and worth the most in the NFL.
Yep.
When's the last time they won anything?
Well, that's what
a playoff game.
That's what David Akers said. That was a highlight for me when he yelled all that Eagles
stuff.
Did you see that? Except, again, it reminds me of a few minutes ago when I got real whiny there, when this little, like, 5'9", 160-pound.
The kicker.
Last time you guys were in the Super Bowl, none of these draft picks were born.
It
takes a little out of it.
It does, and that's probably the first time a kicker has ever had a microphone if he's ever asked him a question.
And Drew Pearson last year when he did it in Philadelphia, like, he probably hadn't had that adrenaline since he was playing.
Yeah.
His hand was like, he was so pumped. His hand was shaking with the card. All right, another good talk, another dip into race relations. Why not? Needs to be talked about. Some comedy there in the middle and our new equipment hopefully worked out. We'll see how this recording is. We'll be back next week, and maybe we'll put in that sports alarm if we get too sportsy. I also want to bring in anyone who's listened to some of the old podcasts, Nooch, at some point, because I just feel like the combination of Ephraim and Nooch would be very entertaining for me, if not for everyone else. Because Nooch would have some good questions. And I'm guessing, Ephraim, you'd have some good questions about Nooch, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is this thing called Nooch? All right, that's a tease for next time. This was the Sports Dump Podcast. Have a good time. Night. Day.